Everything you need to know about how to stop hurting the people you love is in the Healed Being course, a comprehensive step-by-step program to help those hurting the ones they love stop the behavior, get to the root of the emotional triggers behind those behaviors, and create the healthiest, most amazing relationships possible. If this sounds like something you or someone you know might need, visit healedbeing.com. Life presents the toughest challenges. Every day you are faced with decisions that test your ability to express who you really want to be in this world. We're told to keep saying affirmations and keep thinking positively, but what do you do when that stuff doesn't work? Welcome to the Overwhelmed Brain, where you'll learn to make decisions that are right for you so that you can create the life you want now. Hey, this is Paul Coliani, and I want to help you learn the skills you need to deal with many of life's challenges. I'll share with you everything I've learned from a lifetime of dysfunctional behavior, ruining relationships, toxic and immature words and actions, and but I've also healed. I mean, I'm still healing. I'm always on that journey. I've also learned a lot over the past two decades. I've studied a lot. I've been certified in a few things, and here I am trying to share this stuff with the world. And after I started my healing journey and finally developed healthy coping mechanisms and tuned more into my empathy instead of my selfishness, I saw the light. I finally realized I was the common denominator of all my problems, and I took responsibility for my results. That's right, I stopped blaming other people for bad outcomes and just started exploring how I got myself into so much emotional turmoil in the first place. Now that you're here, I promise to share everything I know about using emotional intelligence and critical thinking to change the course of a difficult situation or even your life, all without compromising who you are. This show consists of my personal opinions and is meant for informational purposes only. Always seek a professional for your mental health and well-being. And let's just get right into something, another difficult situation that somebody has written to me about. And this one is about a romantic relationship, but it contains stuff that we can all relate to in case you're not in a romantic relationship. Doubt and guilt. Let's talk about that. So this person wrote, "Hey, Paul, I listened to your Love and Abuse podcast, my other podcast." She said, "I have recently left an abusive relationship and I'm still feeling hurt and weak, but also doubting if I was right to leave him or if I was wrong to call our relationship toxic. How do I deal with that doubt and guilt? How do I continue to assure myself that I made the right choice?" The context is I left this relationship about a few years ago, and after a while we decided we could be friends, not knowing at the time that it had been abusive. So for the past few years, we've been occasionally meeting up for dinners, etc., and I have felt myself being drained and empty after every meetup. These feelings are how I figured out, with the help of my current partner, that this wasn't healthy and that I may have been or are being abused. Thank you for your advice." Okay, thank you for sharing that. And where do I begin with this one? This one, I'm going to begin with the question, do you think it's healthy to be in a relationship with someone who drains you? Do you think it's healthy? You're going to say no. I'm hoping you'll say no. I'm sure you will. Do you think it's healthy? I just want you to say it for yourself. Do you think that's healthy? The reason I'm going there first is because when you have a relationship that you're not sure is toxic, if it's draining you, then it's still healthy to leave. And let's just say that you're wrong about it being toxic. Let's just say you're wrong that he was abusive. Let's just say you're wrong about all that. You still feel drained and you couldn't stay in that situation because it's draining. I just had a recent episode over at Love and Abuse that talks about the drain. Just go to loveandabuse.com, and if you click on listen to podcast, there's a little search bar at the top of the page that you can look for the word drain and you'll find it. And it's all about the drain. The drain is the signal. The drain tells you that you're going in the wrong direction. So regardless if it was toxic, abusive, or if he was the nicest guy in the world and you just didn't get along, probably not, but he's draining you. There's a drain, or you're being or feeling drained around him, which means there's probably something he's doing to take your power away. And emotional abuse can be so subtle. You know, the covert kind of emotional abuse can be so subtle. And the big sign, or at least a big sign, one of the big signs, one of the big clues that you're in an abusive or possibly toxic, possibly dysfunctional relationship is you feel drained after an interaction. Now, there are other reasons to feel drained, like I used to feel drained around my mom because she talked so much. She talked and talked and talked and talked, and it was draining to me. And now I talk as much as her. I mean, when we're together, we get together and we love chatting back and forth. But for many years, she was a drain, but it didn't feel like a toxic drain. I just couldn't keep up with her. That's a different kind of drain. You can have that drain with certain people. Oh my God, they talk so much, but they're so nice. But they talk a lot and I don't know what to do, and that's fine. That kind of drain, you might be able to just tolerate if you want. You know, this is up to you. But I'm talking about a drain that you just can't figure out what's going on. I mean, sometimes people will say a lot of things under the radar. And they say things in a way that are passive-aggressive, slightly influencing you or manipulating you, slightly hurtful. Let me think. There are certain words that people use or certain phrases that they use that when you're talking to them, they slip it in. And they know it's a dig at you and you don't. Somebody slips a dig at you. Like, let's just say that you didn't finish high school. You didn't finish high school and somebody says something about it. And you don't really feel good about it. I'm just making the scenario. Let's just say you don't feel good about it and you wish you had finished high school. And they say something like, well, you know, because you didn't finish high school, you have different options. Now, that doesn't sound like a mean thing. They mentioned it, and maybe it doesn't feel very good to you because they mentioned it, but what was the point of them mentioning it? Because you didn't finish high school, you don't have as many options, or you have different options. That could have been a dig. And it's hard to say out of context. You want to hear the rest of the story. Maybe you were talking about that earlier, but if it's just out of the blue, it's almost like they want to put you down or make you feel inferior. And that's what I mean, is that sometimes people will say things to make you feel inferior, and that takes your power away. And they do it, I mean, some of them will do it in a very clever way, in a very, again, under the radar way, so that you don't think it's a dig. In fact, they make you feel bad about yourself, and they want you to feel bad about yourself, and they want you to believe that you caused yourself to feel bad. Oh yeah, I never finished high school. I really feel bad about that. But that might have been the seed they planted. They may have planted that seed on purpose to make you feel bad. And if you're in what I call a lowered state, feeling bad, there are other lowered states like feeling tired, feeling hungry, feeling inebriated, or being inebriated, being high. These are lowered states that you aren't your full self. You aren't your whole self. And because you aren't your whole self, you can be lured into a trap sometimes. But even if you're feeling good, even if you're feeling great, someone can throw in a dig or a passive-aggressive comment, and suddenly you don't feel great anymore. But it's even worse when you're in a lowered state. So a lowered state in this example might be you're carrying around some guilt or bad feeling about not finishing high school, using my example, and then they mention it. So that on top of them trying to make you feel guilty or make bad for some reason, that on top of how you already feel and them noticing it, now not only do you feel low or bad inside yourself about this, you know, this reminder that you're carrying around, but now you feel like an inferior person to this other person because they brought it up. So that compounds the feeling. And some people know this. Some people know this and put you in that state of mind or that space so that you lose some of your energy, that drain. And when you lose your energy, that's a power drain. They're taking away your power, your feeling of empowerment. I mean, even if you don't feel empowered before, that drain pulls even more. They take it away from you. And where does that put you? You know, in emotionally abusive situations, that puts you in a state sometimes of seeking a compliment or worth from the other person, the very person that took your power away in the first place. So now there's a strange thing that happens where you're getting put down or insulted or made to feel inferior and your power is draining. And to regain that power, you seek some sense of worth or some feeling of acceptance or importance or significance in this other person's life, even though that person puts you in that lowered state to begin with. And I'm telling you, this is why emotionally abusive behavior continues, is because the victim of emotional abuse will seek their sense of worth and sometimes their identity from the person that's abusing them. So it's a vicious cycle, and it leads to all kinds of bad things. It's a commitment to a trauma. And when you make that sort of commitment to a trauma, that cyclical event that happens over and over again, this is what happens in your life. It becomes a rut. You become entangled in this rut. So it's important to maybe recognize it. Like, wow, that person just made me feel bad. I don't know how they did it. You might say that. I don't know how they did it. They made me feel bad. And here I am trying to get their acceptance of me, trying to win it back. I want them to see me as smart. This happens a lot in parent-child situations. The child just gets reprimanded and then seeks the attention from the parent or acceptance, worth. They seek the love and a support from the parent that just reprimanded them or disciplined them. So this vicious cycle can transfer into your adult relationships. So it doesn't always start there. Sometimes it just starts with a bad player in a partnership. A bad player could be you meet someone and they're toxic, and you don't know they're toxic, and then they do things and say things that make you feel in that lowered state. But you don't know what's happening. So suddenly it's new to you. You don't know what to do about it. You don't think that somebody could be like this. But, you don't think somebody's gonna be like this, and you don't give it a second thought. Because then you think, well, they can't be like this. You know, that can't be them, because they haven't shown me this side of them before. So that can't be them. It must be me. That can happen. So anyway, let me get back to this message. She wrote, I recently left the abusive relationship and I'm still feeling hurt and weak, but I'm doubting if I was right to leave him or if I was wrong to call our relationship toxic. Don't call the relationship anything. Call yourself the way you feel. Do you feel like you were around, I like to use the term every now and then, relationship radiation? Do you feel like you exposed yourself to toxic material? Even if it wasn't him, no matter what, does that drain feel toxic? And if toxic's not the right word, do you feel a little bit emotionally ill, if I can use that phrase? Do you feel emotionally sick? Do you feel physically ill? Because that happens too. Our feelings are our physical sensations in the body, and our emotions are the names we give to those feelings. So we have this feeling in our stomach, and we call it anxiety. We have this feeling in our chest, and we call it fear or sadness, wherever it is for you. Anger is always in my stomach. anxiety is always in my chest and my stomach when it happens. So I name these emotions and I feel them in my body. So I know something's going on. I remember some salesman one day tried to dupe me on something, tried to add an extended warranty without my permission. So I was going to raise the price of the item I was buying. Something didn't feel right, and I had to stop and trust my feelings. I highly recommend you trust what you're feeling, because something's going on. Your subconscious mind is picking something up. It's picking up nonverbal cues. It's picking up voice inflection. It's picking up all kinds of stuff that consciously you aren't aware of. And that gives you the feeling. It plays into your intuition. It could be your intuition. So this is what I do. I'm getting a feeling. Something's not right. Something doesn't feel right. And so I explore it. What doesn't feel right? What just happened? Oh, he tried to tack on this thing and tried to just blow it over me, blow it over my head, so I didn't see it, I guess. And so I had to backtrack and say, okay, what's going on here? What are you doing? Not afraid to ask what's going on. Not afraid to make a fool of myself in case I missed it and misunderstood it. Just going to ask because I didn't like the feeling. It's sort of like that comment, you know, oh, you know, since you didn't finish high school, you're going to have less options. Or fewer options, because I did finish high school. I had to learn that myself. I'm not making fun of anyone who uses that. But the difference between less and fewer, it took me 38 years to learn. Anyway, there are fewer options. And now I have this feeling. So I can say, well, you know, this might be my answer, my reply to this. What do you mean by that? What do you mean by that? That's a great response. What do you mean by that? When you get this feeling, you might have to ask that question. What do you mean by that? This is a great question to ask passive-aggressive people. Passive-aggressive people want to tell you something, but not directly. So they will be very passive about it. They will hide it in their inflection and hide it in their words. So you can feel it, and you might be able to tell something's going on, and maybe you got the gist of it, but it's important to address it when you sense it. It's important to address it, and the question I love is, what do you mean by that? Because it causes them to stop in their tracks and explain what they just said, and passive-aggressive people do not like that. They don't want to be put on the spot. They don't want to be highlighted. They don't want to be in the spotlight. So when you put them in the spotlight, now they have to explain themselves. And I use this this questioning technique in one of my passive-aggressive episodes. Just go to theoverwhelmedbrain.com and type in the word aggressive or passive in the search field, and you'll find it. But I do talk about that, just asking them, what do you mean by that? And what happens in their mind is now they realize that what they tried to do slipped some sort of passive anger under their breath or under their comment. What they tried to do to make you feel bad, to take your power away, to make you, I don't know, think twice, to make you think differently, to manipulate you in some way, that's not working. And if it's not working, they're less likely to try it again. Because when you ask someone to explain, what do you mean by that? Give me some more details. Let's get into this. That's going to make them feel very much self-conscious. Someone who's trying to make you feel bad is now being put on the spot, and they have to explain themselves. And it's just a simple question. What do you mean by that? And then see what happens. But coming back to this person, let's just say that you think it's a toxic relationship and you leave and you even call it a toxic relationship. It's based on how you feel while you're with the person, regardless if it's a toxic relationship or not. Because I'm here to tell you, you may not ever get closure or understanding that something was abusive or toxic ever. You may never get closure on that. So that's why it's important to be self-aware here and have an understanding of how you feel when you're with them. And you're already telling me how you feel with this person. you're saying, I don't like how I feel. I'm assuming you don't like it. You feel yourself being drained and empty. You even use the word empty after every meetup. So not only do you feel drained, you feel empty. How much lower can it go? How much worse can you feel? This is a toxic situation. Even if he shows no sign of it whatsoever, he's not necessarily on the same wavelength you are. I have a strong feeling what you're dealing with is a very clever, very manipulative person who probably tries to make you feel guilty to go in the direction he wants you to go, do what he wants you to do, and he also may feel superior. And I'm making a lot of assumptions. I don't know this guy from anything else but what you explained to me, but I hear many victims of emotional abuse. I hear their stories. I hear where they are. And I, of course, understand what this does to people. I've been studying it for years. I know what it does to people. That draining feeling, what you're feeling, is a toxic situation. So you may not be able to tell that the relationship was toxic, but it doesn't matter. You feel like you were exposed to toxic material. You were exposed to a toxic environment. And yes, this person probably is toxic. Doesn't matter if the relationship was toxic or not. What you're feeling is that drain and especially empty. What are you going to do about it now? So this is where you are. You said for the past several years, we've been occasionally meeting up, and I'm assuming that means you're still friends. And I would be very wary about keeping a person like this in your life, because you will continue to feel this way. There is no way out of this. There's no key to making this a better situation. Your best bet is to take some time away from the person long enough to break any bond. Because when you break the bond, you break the influence, you break the power somebody has over you. So breaking the bond is being away from someone long enough to be clear-headed. And when you're away from someone for long enough, the fog starts to lift. Typically takes 2 to 4 to 6 months, even longer. I've heard up to a year, but in my experience, it's between 2 and 6 months. When the fog lifts, you have a better understanding. You have almost clarity. But when the fog is still there, when you have a bond with someone who is toxic and wearing you down, when the fog is still there, you can't think clearly. You're just foggy. No other word for it. I think you're foggy. And you can't see clearly until the fog lifts. And the only way to see clearly is to break the bond you have with the person. That might mean that you start new later on when you've had time without them being on your mind. So bond breaking might be different for everyone here, but I look at it as not feeling a desire to be with them anymore. If you don't feel the desire to be with them, to meet with them, to talk with them, and your life can go on without them, you can wish them well, of course, and maybe you can miss them, but if you know you could go on without them and be okay with it, that's what a bond break, breaking the bond might look like. I can go on without them and be okay, and I wish them well. But any type of pull or draw that you have to them, especially if it's, oh, I feel guilty, I should call them. If that's in there, that bond is still there and it's not broken. So I believe that you have to break that bond so that you can start fresh, so you can start new. When you start a relationship again from a clear place, you get a better understanding of how you feel, of what the relationship is, about who they are. Because once you come from a place of clarity with no bond, with no pull, with no draw, you get to see the person very clearly and you get to assess the behavior as it comes in. Again, I've seen this a lot. Somebody will get into a relationship again after the fog is cleared and they sense the behavior in a different way. They see it, they hear it, and they start going, whoa, I see what's happening now. what that person just said was a put down. I didn't even see that before. What that person just said was an insult. I didn't see that before. What is going on here? Now I get it. Now I get it. So I needed to be, or I needed to be clear-headed first. I needed to be out of the relationship. I needed to have that bond broken for long enough so I could be clear going into it without any feelings. Because sometimes we have feelings, I don't want to mistreat the other person. I don't want to make them feel bad. I don't want to call them out on behaviors because, you know, I'm a nice person. I'm compassionate. I'm kind. I'm caring. I'm supportive. And I don't want to show them that I'm the bad guy. So I'm just going to be nice. I'm just going to let it pass, you know, what they just said or what they just did. And then they get away with it. And then you have some sort of values violation or boundary violation. They did something under the radar. And now you have this feeling inside of you. And this is part of the drain as well. Because sometimes you get these feelings and they build up. And then you don't do anything with them because you think, well, maybe it's just me. And now you have this internal struggle or this internal stress that you have to deal with. So again, I talked about the drain on love and abuse. Go to loveandabuse.com. You can find it there. But what I wanted to talk about is the doubt and the guilt. That's what I started to say at the very beginning of the episode. So when we come back, that's what we're going to get into. We'll be right back after this. I started off today's episode telling you about my lifetime of dysfunction, how I showed up in relationships. In 2017, I came up with the MEAN workbook that helps you understand and pinpoint emotionally abusive behavior in your relationship through a 200-point assessment and evaluation, along with helping you decide your next steps, whether that's staying in and working on the relationship or planning your departure because you've had enough and you're ready to move on. And that can be any type of relationship, but it's typically romantic and family. And since I've released the MEAN workbook over at loveandabuse.com, many people who heard my story about how I used to be the toxic person in relationships reached out and they wanted to know how they could stop their own hurtful behavior toward people they loved. So I spent about a year and a half outlining the exact steps one needs to take to stop emotionally abusive behavior and start showing up as the healthiest, most loving and supportive person they can be. And there's nothing else that I've seen anywhere. I've discovered that there are far too few resources for the emotionally abusive person who wants to change. And I hear from them all the time. I talk to them daily in the online support group. And since I've healed from doing a lot of the behaviors that I talk about on this show and my other podcast, Love and Abuse, I knew I had to share the steps that I took to heal and change my life completely. And I put everything I know and all that I've learned into both the workbook and the Healed Being program. So if you're on one side of a hurtful, manipulative, controlling, or just plain old difficult relationship, check out these two resources. The MEAN Workbook and the Love and Abuse podcast can be found at loveandabuse.com, and the Healed Being program for emotionally abusive people that want to change can be found at healedbeing.com. You have options. I want to make sure that everyone has the chance to heal and the guidance on what steps to take next. Stay strong. I'm going to get back to this message and tell you, what am I going to tell you? Oh, talk about the idea of doubt and guilt. So doubt, you'll probably, like I said, not be able to figure out what the relationship is or who they are even. Because a lot of people, especially manipulative people, don't want to be found out. So they're not going to reveal themselves. And if they don't reveal themselves, all you have is questions. They may not answer those questions. They may not want you to know what they're trying to do. And honestly, sometimes people do it without even knowing they're doing it. For many years, I started off this show telling you I've led a life of dysfunction. of toxic behaviors. And I laugh about it now because I've done a lot of healing and I see the behavior so clearly now in myself when it comes out and in others. And hopefully it doesn't come out too often, but I catch myself and I say, whoa, where did that come from? I need to work on that. When it happens, I'm aware of it. But before I wasn't. Before I was just like, this is how life is supposed to be. This is how I learned to operate. This is how I've learned to cope. And I didn't even use those words back then. I just knew that this is how life was supposed to be. And people around me were hurt. I didn't see it. So there are unconscious, emotionally abusive people. But this is why I talk about this stuff. It's helpful to either A, be aware of those people, or B, make them aware of their behaviors. Like this person who wrote, you could say the next time you meet, if you do, hey, what you just said is not very nice. That wasn't very nice. And see what they say. You could do that. With doubt, here's how I look at it. I try to answer all the questions I can using as much evidence as I can to deal with doubt. If I doubt something, I'm going to exhaust myself researching, trying to figure out the answer. Like, you know what? I doubt that those lights in the sky are stars. I would never say that. But let's just say I did. I doubt they're stars. Now, with that doubt would come, or at least for me, would come the questions like, well, what are they then? And I want to know. So I'm going to research. I'm going to look up astronomy. I'm going to listen to astronomers. And I'm going to listen to a six-year-old tell me they're stars. I know they're stars myself. But I'm going to address my doubts as much as possible. I'm going to do the research. And this is the same thing with relationships. And this is why I was telling you to ask him, what do you mean by that? That way you can get to the bottom of this. Because again, this often happens with kind, caring, compassionate, generous, loving people. They assume the other person didn't mean anything by what they just did or said. And because of that, they don't ask. They don't want to appear to be the bad guy. But if you have doubts, if you are feeling drained, you're either going to continue feeling that way because you're not going to dig further, or you're going to have to break up the relationship and not know anything ever. So if you do ask a question like, what do you mean by that? And you get into a conversation that might be able to help you come to some realizations about what they really do mean. And the more you ask, what do you mean by that, or something like it, to understand where they're coming from, to understand what they mean, the more you're going to learn, and it's going to help you build evidence. Not that you're trying to bury them or anything like that, but you need to build evidence for yourself. You need to know for a fact what's going on. You may not know all the facts ever, but you need to know as much as you can. Now, if they give you aloof or vague or ambiguous answers, there's probably similar meanings there, but if you get those kinds of answers, like, oh no, I didn't mean anything by that. Well, what did you mean by that? You might have to ask again. And if you still don't get any answers, then there might be some hidden agenda under there. There might be something that they're doing that they don't want you to know about. And if that's the case, they may never give you any evidence. They may just continue being who they are. And if it doesn't feel right, it's not right. You got to get out of that situation. You got to pull back. Got to break the bond. In my opinion, you don't have to. You don't have to do anything I'm saying. If I were you, I would look at this as a toxic situation. May not be a toxic relationship. He may not be a toxic person, but it's a toxic situation because you feel a drain. You're being exposed to toxic material of some sort. So emotional toxicity does exist. It does drain you. That's how you work on the doubt part. And once you have enough evidence, you can either make a conclusion or not. But that's what I would do. I would build up the evidence just so I know. Because I want to know. And if I can't find out, then I'll take what I know and take how I feel with me. And I'll just be away from that person for a while so I'm no longer under their influence in any way, good or bad. I just need to break the bond. So now for the guilt part. This is actually my favorite part. Not that guilt feels good, is probably one of the worst feelings. But when you feel guilty, I've talked about this before, when you feel guilty, think about doing something in the opposite direction that made you feel guilty in the past. So let's just say you feel guilty because you left because you called it a toxic relationship or you called him a toxic person. Let's just say that all that exists. Well, first of all, you're still seeing him in some way, shape, or form. And, you know, people are going to hear that and go, why are you still seeing this guy? You're in another relationship. Why are you still seeing this person, especially if they make you feel bad? Yes, we can be friends with our exes. I have no problem with that. These are nights out with just you and him, or do you go out with him and your partner? Do you talk about each? I don't know. That's might be a situation you want to look at. But if my girlfriend, myself, if she was going out with her ex and they were enjoying nights out together, I'd be a little, I don't know if I'd be perturbed. I'd want to spend that time with her. And maybe this is all just my insecurity talking. But to me personally, it's a little unusual because you have this ex and it was a toxic situation. Whether he was toxic or the relationship was toxic, you feel drained and you continue to see him. And if my girlfriend came back and say, every time I see this person, I feel drained, I'd ask her, why are you continuing to see this person? You know, he's your ex. Let's move forward. Let's keep him in the past and let's move forward together. So that's a personal comment. That's a personal thought of mine. It's not a direction for you. It's not something I'm telling you to do. I'm just saying, you know, if your current partner has any feelings about this and they're being nice and they don't want to say anything about it, you want to find out. Are you comfortable with me doing this? You know, they might have some feelings about it, or maybe not. Maybe I'm completely reading into this and I'm wholly wrong. And if I am, more power to you. You make your own decisions. But you know, I see what you wrote here, and I don't like the idea of my girlfriend going to see someone toxic, especially if it's an ex, because there may still be a bond there that isn't broken. And that is what makes me feel uncomfortable. That bond isn't broken. That's strange to me. Again, it's just a personal thing. That is my personal feeling about it. This is not advice. This is not a suggestion. But as a partner of someone who might go see her ex and she comes back and says she has these feelings or she doesn't feel right or it feels weird or whatever, then it's going to be more uncomfortable. I mean, it's already uncomfortable for me to go have her go spend some time with somebody else if that happened. That doesn't happen. I don't have to worry about it. But if it did, I'd probably be accepting of it. But with that feeling I get because of the story she tells me about feeling drained, that tells me there might still be a bond there. So that's why I emphasize and I'm rehashing it. Breaking the bond helps you become more clear. Now, with the guilt, coming back to this, I like to look at guilt as an opportunity to pay it forward. That is my number one direction and philosophy with guilt. It's an opportunity to pay it forward. I mean, I could pay it back for sure. Like if you felt guilty about something you said to him, you could just say, look, I'm sorry I called you toxic, or I'm sorry I called this relationship toxic. I probably shouldn't have said that. I apologize. That's an easy one. Well, I say it's easy. I know this is not easy. Sometimes it's very difficult. But if you feel guilty about something you said or something you did, just apologize for it and mean it. I'm really sorry about what I said. I shouldn't have done that. And then if he says, well, maybe we should get back together. Come on. Hopefully he doesn't say that because you're in a relationship and that means he's not respecting your boundaries in your relationship. But if he did, if he said something like that, you could say, look, we broke up. That was my choice. And I'm happy with the direction I'm going in now. I'm just apologizing for how it happened. You could say something like that. So hopefully it doesn't go in that direction because that means he's got an agenda and he may have, I don't know. I get some, my hair's standing up on the back of my neck when I read your email, but I don't know. So he might have an agenda, might not, but hopefully he's supportive of you and your relationship, and he never tries to interfere. But where I was going, the guilt thing. So let's just say that you apologize or you don't. It's up to you. It's an opportunity to pay it forward. And the way I look at that is I remember how I treated my wife. I remember how I treated all my partners. And up until my divorce, I was dysfunctional. I was toxic. I mean, I was nice in a lot of ways. I was supportive in a lot of ways. I did a lot of nice things, a lot of great things, but I had some bad behaviors. I had some toxic behaviors. I was emotionally abusive. I made my partners feel guilty. I made them feel bad. I made them feel inferior. I made them feel unloved. I say all of this with shame. I don't like it. I don't like that I did that. I don't like that I was that person. But I'm not going to hold on to the guilt because I've done my best to either apologize to them, make it up to them by telling the world, this is who I was. And I've actually had an ex or two, I think, reach out and say, wow, everything you said, thank you for saying that. And I felt good. I wasn't trying to get their attention. I put it out there. I wasn't going to hold it in. This is what I did. This is who I was. And so that helped. That helped. What didn't absolve me of the guilt, but it helped. What absolved me was knowing that I would never, ever be that person or do that behavior again. Ever again. I would never, ever do emotionally abusive behavior again. That was my commitment to myself and to everyone I care about, the people I met, anyone in my life. I'm not going to be the person I used to be. That meant being more honest. That meant speaking up, speaking my truth. Because believe it or not, a lot of emotionally abusive people don't actually speak their truth. They hide it. They hide their anger, and it comes out in other ways. It comes out in controlling ways, manipulative ways. Sometimes verbally abusive, and they lash out, and you know they're angry, but there's still a hidden message in there, like I'm afraid or I'm insecure. A lot of hidden feelings and hidden thoughts that emotionally abusive people have. So that was me. That was me for many, many, many years, up until my 30s. And I mean, that doesn't sound long, but 30, maybe late 30s, 38, 39. It took a while for me to learn that I was this person. And it took a divorce to really let it sink in, really drive it home. And after my divorce, that's when I decided, I think I need to stay single to try to figure out why the heck my relationships keep failing. That was the first time I ever decided to stay single, because I always looked at the other person as my source of happiness. And if you look at another person as your only source of happiness and the only way you can feel good inside yourself, I'm sorry to say it's dysfunctional. It's toxic because you drain them. Talk about drain. You drain the other person because they are your source of energy. And nobody can sustain that. Nobody can handle that for months and even years. It will eventually dissolve the relationship because one person cannot be the energy source. And if you have an insecure person using the other person as that energy source, total drain. It's a drain-a-thon. Unfortunately, you will be sucked dry. It will be an emotional drain like no other. And I did that. I did that to my partners, and it's a terrible, terrible thing, and I had to learn a lot. So I take what I've learned, and I take the guilt, because I really felt guilty. Once I figured out I was doing this, I felt sick to my stomach. I felt so guilty for how I treated them. For the nicest people, I treated the nicest people in the worst way, and I felt so bad. I felt so guilty, and not as bad as they felt because I put them through it, but I suddenly realized just how awful I was, just how abusive I was. So I had all this guilt now. I'm just carrying this guilt around, you know, after my divorce. What do I do with it? So I decided to choose to be single until I figured myself out, until I healed. Because my MO was getting into the next relationship because I needed to be happy. And the only way to be happy is to find someone else to bring into my life so that I could be happy. That was my philosophy back then. The only way to be happy is to have someone else in my life. Having a relationship is a way to be happy, but it shouldn't be the way to be happy. It shouldn't be what you rely on. It should be something that enhances your life, livens it up, makes it more exciting, makes it more thrilling, and yes, even be happier than you are. But it shouldn't be what you rely on to be happy. Sometimes it does. Sometimes it is what you rely on to be happy. Sometimes life is so bad, so challenging, and so disappointing, and so depressing that someone else coming into your life, it is a source of happiness. Yes, I know that happens. But once it happens, you need to find ways to connect with yourself and understand what you might be draining from the other person if that's happening, because that can happen. And I don't mean to make, if you're a victim of this, of just life handing you the wrong deal every single time, and somebody comes into your life finally and you're happy, I don't mean to take that away from you. That's not what I'm doing at all. Now that you have this other person in your life, it's important to connect with yourself and understand, what do I fear? What do I fear losing? What am I worried about all the time? What am I stressed about? Do I feel worthy? Do I love myself? Am I compassionate toward myself? Do I gift myself the blessing of who I am? Can I look in the mirror and say, I love you? You are an amazing person. I love you. You're the best. I love being with you. I love hanging out with you. I love seeing you in the mirror. That sounds vain. Why not? I'm not saying this is about vanity. I'm not saying this is about ego. It's not. It's about getting up to, or at least rising up to, a better homeostasis than you are. If, you know, you're in a lowered state. If you feel unworthy, if you feel unimportant, if you feel unlovable, if you feel unattractive, you're in that lowered state. You're below zero. You have to get up to at least zero so that you can start to feel more positive again. And that might mean you have to lift yourself up, to look in the mirror and say, man, you're great. Look at you. And I know some people have done this and said, I didn't feel authentic. So what? You kind of have to convince yourself sometimes, you're great. Hey, man, you're great. Or hey, woman, or hey, you, you're great. I'm looking in your eyes right now. I had a friend do that once. I said, can you look in the mirror and say that? Can you say, I love you? Oh, man, she started crying. I felt really bad for saying it, but she did. She started crying because I think it really hit something inside of her. It really hit her deep. And that says a lot. And that's something to explore. That's something to reflect upon. And just start asking yourself questions. Why can't I look in the mirror and say that to myself? What's going on there? What am I hitting on? Why don't I feel lovable? Why don't I feel worthy? Why do I look at myself and feel like I need to say something else? Maybe you do. Maybe you need to say it and get it out of your system. I hate you. Whoa. Why would you say that, Paul? No, I'm telling you, if it's in your system, don't resist it. I hate you. I hate you. I hate you. Because sometimes you have to get it out. I don't want you to hate yourself. I don't want you to feel bad about yourself. But if it's in there, you might have to get it out. And I'm not saying that you do this repeatedly. For all of you out there that are thinking that's the worst advice ever, you might have to get it out of your system. Maybe you shouldn't look in the mirror, but maybe you might. I would. I'm not saying you should, but I would. Because if it's in there and I want to say it, or I don't want to say it, but I know it's in there and I have to get it out, I have to express it. Otherwise, I'm repressing it. And if I repress it, it can turn into other things. It can come out in destructive ways later, or it can never come out and turn into depression. I don't want depression. So I might have to say, I'm so stupid. I know we're told not to say that stuff. We're told to get rid of the negative self-talk. And I'm not saying that this becomes your new thing, that you just repeat these terrible things that you say about yourself. I'm only saying that you say it if it's in you, if you feel that way in you. This way, you can get it out of your system, because after you say something like that, there's an energy release. There's an energy release, that negative energy that you've been holding on to. It can really help you just pull it out or push it out. You just get it out, put it out there. And it may not feel good. Oh my God, I just told myself I hate myself. Or I told myself you're so stupid or you're so ugly. You get it out. Oh my God, I got it out. Wow. Is there anything else in there? What else do I need to say? And you don't have to do this in front of a mirror. You can do this in a room or you're in your car or whatever, in your pillow. But here's my caveat. Make it small. Make it a tiny dose. Just do it in a blink, because you don't want to linger in that space. Yes, that might mean you have to resist it. See, I'm all about detecting resistance in the body. When I say, oh, I love myself and I feel resistance, oh, that doesn't feel so true. What does that mean? Does that mean I hate myself? Is that resistance? Maybe there's resistance there too. Maybe I don't hate myself. What else is there? Do I feel unlovable? Oh, that might work. I do feel unlovable. What's that about? So this isn't about just finding the very worst things you can say about yourself and saying it. No, I just want you to get in touch with what's inside of you so that it doesn't become an object of resistance. Because you can feel resistance in your body when you have a certain thought. You can think, oh, that doesn't feel right, or that doesn't feel true. But you can also feel what does feel true, and then you resisting what's true. Like if I ever said, oh man, I hate myself, and I don't want to say that about myself, I might say, whoa, where'd that come from? I'm going to resist that. And then I'm going to feel that resistance. I'm going to feel myself resisting it, and then I'm going to stuff it back down, or I may stuff it back down. And if I stuff it back down, where does it go? It stays inside. So I might need to get it out. And, you know, as a follow-up to saying this to yourself or saying it out loud or saying it in the mirror, as a follow-up, make sure to say, but I'm working on it. I'm working on this. I'm working on trying to feel better or have a better outlook or be more optimistic. I'm working on it. Because you're listening to a show like this. You're working on yourself, even if you think you're not, because nobody who's not working on themselves tunes into something like this and listens to me talk for a good 50 minutes now. You've been listening for a while. You're working on this stuff. You want to feel better. You know, if you're in that space, you want to feel better. You want to feel good about yourself. So no matter what negative thing comes out, no matter what negative inner dialogue is in there, make sure that you say as a follow-up, but I'm working on it. Oh, I hate myself, but you know what? I'm working on it. I'm working on loving myself. I'm working on it. It could be hard, yes, but I'm working on it. Nothing wrong with that. So let me come back and finish up this reply to this message. My guilt propelled me to pay it forward in my current relationship and any person I meet in the future. Let's hope this is my last romantic relationship, but anyone I meet in the future, if I ever have that guilty feeling come up, I use it as my motivation and my incentive to treat the person I'm with the exact opposite of the way I treated the other person, that where I got that guilt from. And what that means, to me at least, is, for example, I made my wife feel guilty when I was married. I made her feel guilty about eating junk food. It was terrible. I was judgmental. I was critical. I was selfish. And I didn't care at the time. I mean, I loved her and I did care, but I didn't care if she hurt because of what I said. And that's just, I hate to admit that. It's embarrassing. It's disgusting behavior to be so critical towards someone that you make them feel awful about themselves or feel unlovable. It's even worse. You make them feel unlovable because of behavior that you can't accept in them. And so that's who I used to be. I remember that. And whenever those feelings of guilt came up, You know, whenever I felt guilty about what I did, which was a lot in the very beginning, when I got into my next relationship, a good year later, I had already made a commitment to never being that person again, but also treating the next person completely different. I mean, 180. If I made my ex feel guilty, I was going to make my current partner feel amazing and feel supported and feel loved. I know it doesn't make up for how I treated my ex, but sometimes you can't make things up. Sometimes you can't go back in time. Well, all the time. You can't go back in time. So sometimes you just have to go forward and pay it forward. And that's exactly what I did. And so whenever I saw my girlfriend eating junk food, and I'd already passed this, I'd already healed from this, but I remembered who I was. And even today, hey, you want another brownie? That's who I am. Hey, I'll make you some brownies. How about that? Do you want a bag of candy? No problem. This is me being the opposite of who I was. It shows her that I support her. And if she has a problem with it, you know, she can deal with that. If she has a problem, like, stop feeding me junk food, of course, I will honor that. I'm not going to force it on her. But there's a good feeling I have when I can look at someone who does behavior that used to trigger me, that I can then support that behavior, even if there's a part of me that disagrees with it. I mean, I don't think I disagree with it, but when I see her eating anything that's junk food, it doesn't trigger me like it used to, but it does cause me to be more loving. So there's a like a side effect to my healing that because I had this guilt, or a side effect of my guilt, really, because I had this guilt, when I see the same behavior that used to trigger me, I am not only extra supportive and extra accommodating, I'm also loving in a way that was completely opposite than the way I used to. And it wasn't love before. It was selfish. It was my version of love, a toxic love. But when I move forward, the guilt helps me to show up as the best person I possibly can be. When I used to be critical, now I'm loving. When I used to be judgmental, now I'm supportive. When I used to try to make her feel guilty, I now do nothing of the sort. I show her that I'm here for her and I love her no matter what. And she's doing nothing wrong. That's like the cherry on top. I'm okay with everything she does because she's her own person. She's an independent person in a relationship with me, and I'm not here to control her. I'm here to love her. I'm here to show her that I want her to be happy, regardless of what I want. If I want her to do something differently, sure, I'll talk about it. Hey, look, you know, when you leave your socks on the floor, when you leave them on the table, when you leave them in the kitchen sink, it kind of bothers me. Let's talk about this. But if she said, well, I like to do that, I would go, okay, then that's who you are. I accept it. If I couldn't accept it, then it's not for me to stay in a situation that I can't accept and then give her grief about it. This is where I am today. It's not up to us to give someone grief for something that we can't accept about them. It's not up to us to do that. It's not up to us to give them grief for it. It's up to us to make a decision based on how we feel about it. Again, this might be something that you don't agree with. I don't know, but I look at life this way. If there's something I can't accept about my partner, then I can choose to either not accept it and whine about it. You know, tell her, I can't believe you're doing this and you always do this and why don't you change? I could be that person, the person I used to be. Or I could look at her and say, you know what? I love her and I want her to be happy. And if that's what makes her happy, that's what makes me happy. I want her to be happy. And if she's happy, I'm happy. And if it really bothers me, I have a philosophy I follow here. If something she does really bothers me, then my problem with her is not her problem. It's mine. My problem with her is not her problem. It's mine. So I accept responsibility for how I feel about what she's doing. Now, this doesn't mean if she's like going outside and scratching my car, I'm not going to say, hey, if that makes you happy, I'm all for it. Go for it. I love you, honey. Not like that at all. I still have boundaries. I still have values. I still look at things that I own, that I feel good about, that are important to me. And if she's like destroying those things, I'm going to say something. Don't do that. Please don't do that. Why are you doing that? But if she just does things for her own enjoyment and it's not really damaging me, you know, some people might say, well, if they do this, it does damage me. This is where I tell you, you look at someone and you say, can I accept them for who they are? And if I can't, why am I here? This is a loving relationship. Can I accept that person for who they are? And if I can't, why am I here? Or am I going to stay and choose not to accept who they are and continue to complain about who they are to them? That's what makes relationships miserable. So to wrap up this email, to wrap up the part on guilt, use guilt as your motivation to make up for what you didn't do or couldn't do before. Use it as a way to treat the people in your life today the way you've never treated other people in your life. If you hurt someone in the past and you can't apologize to them, reach out to someone today and whatever you did in the past, try to make that something that compels you to make up for it with the person that you're with, if that makes sense. So if you were lying a lot in a past situation or a past relationship, and you feel guilty about lying, guess what you're going to do in this relationship or your next relationship? You're going to be honest. You're going to be transparent. You're going to be vulnerable. You're going to have opportunities that presented themselves before, like, oh, I could really lie about this. I could lie about where the money went. But that's who I was. That's not who I am. And I already felt guilty about that. So I'm going to turn that around. I'm going to pay it forward. I'm going to put all my energy into this new direction, which is the opposite direction of lying, which is being fully truthful. You know what? This is what happened. I know you'll be upset with me. I'm so sorry. This is where the money went. And then you might have to hear an earful. But this is the price. This is the price you pay after doing something that made you feel guilty or whatever. I mean, maybe you didn't do anything. Like this person who wrote, maybe she didn't do anything at all. But guilt is usually something you blame yourself for. So if you blame yourself for something in the past and you're holding on to the guilt, this is how you start to pay it off. This is how you start to work through it. This is how you absolve yourself, or at least work on absolving. You know, you're working on yourself. This is what it's all about. I have episodes on guilt as well, theoverwhelmedbrain.com, if that helps. Thank you so much for joining me. I appreciate you. If you're still listening, if you're still here after all those admissions I made, I appreciate you so much. Thank you for showing up and making it this far. I'll come back with my thank yous and my goodbyes and my final words right after this. Thank you for listening to another episode of The Overwhelmed Brain. I want to thank our patrons this week: Michelle, Angel, Crystal, Chris, Fetzile, Debbie, Wanda. I appreciate all of you. These are the patrons of the week. I read new names every week. Very grateful for your support. Thank you so much. And they valued the show and they decided to give back because they could. If you can and you want to, you can head over to moretob.com. And there are options over there that you can take advantage of. And I am so grateful. Thank you again, patrons. I appreciate all of you. And for a show on how to deal with difficult relationships, talk about that every now and then here. It's loveandabuse.com. Go to my other podcast, Love and Abuse, and you will find all kinds of episodes over there that dive into a lot of the stuff that we actually talked about today. Loveandabuse.com. And if you are the difficult one in the relationship, if you are making it hard for the other person. If you are doing some of the behaviors that I talked about that I used to do, head over to healedbeing.com and you'll find a very comprehensive step-by-step walking you through how to stop the behaviors, develop new coping mechanisms, deal with your emotional triggers, all of that to create the healthiest, most sustainable, long-lasting relationships possible. That's over at healedbeing.com. And finally, thanks to Kevin McLeod of Incompetech.com for some of the music transitions in The Overwhelmed Brain. And I want to address something that just came to me from that email. She wrote that she just recently left an abusive relationship and she still feels hurt and weak. But she wrote later that she left the relationship about 5 years ago. So I don't know if our perception of time is different, but that's not very recent unless you had a polygamous or polyamory relationship. If you were in a polyamorous type of relationship where there are more than one partner, this changes my answer very little. Very little. I mean, you did say that your current partner helped you figure out that you might be being abused. So I don't know if you're, I don't know that situation. Like my answer might have been different if I knew it was a polyamorous relationship, because I wouldn't have said, well, how does your current partner feel about you going out with your ex-partner or something like that? Because that's it's a different dynamic. I've talked to quite a few people that have these types of relationships, and it's something that not everyone can relate to. I couldn't. I couldn't relate to it until I started to get to know them and understand what was happening in their relationships. And they deal with a lot of the same issues, but you know, sometimes there are challenges in the polyamory type of relationship. So I hope I'm using the term right, polyamory, polygamous. There's probably differences that I'm not fully aware of. I apologize if I'm not using it right. But in those types of relationships, there are multiple partners sometimes, and you can get into some different challenges. So I don't know if that was this type of relationship or not. I treated it as a single or at least monogamous relationship with two people. And that's that. I just wanted to share that just in case you are listening and you might think that I'm not aware of that could be a different type of relationship. I am familiar with those relationships and my answer might have been a little bit different, but not much depending on that. Otherwise, you know, I just read that she said, with the help of my current partner. So that means you probably are talking to your current partner and they are trying to help you through this, trying to think through it with you. And that partner sounds very supportive. Good for you. Good for them. I think that's great to have a supportive partner, especially probably very secure in themselves, to trust you, to be able to meet up with your ex and not have a problem with it. And then they help you figure out the friendship with your ex, you know, you and your friendship with your ex. I think that's quite advanced. That's quite mature. I don't know how far I could go with that. All I know is when it becomes toxic, I'm saying, hey, there's a problem here. You come back drained. So you go out and have whatever time you have with this person and you come back drained. And now you're drained with me. That affects our relationship. So this is why I get a little bit resistant when it comes to, say, my partner seeing an ex of hers. If she came back wanting to see me and happy to see me and everything was great and she didn't feel drained and she had a good time and it was just, you know, them, whatever, talking about anything, it might be a lot different. But coming back drained, like you just took that away from me. I mean, not her, the other person. The other person took that away from you. It took our connection, our energy with each other away. So that might be another reason, or it would be. It would be definitely another reason that I would say, it's not a good idea for you to see this person, whether they're toxic or not, because you're coming back drained and that kind of takes away from us. And maybe that's selfish. Maybe I shouldn't think that way, but I do, and I'm okay with it, and I think my girlfriend would feel the same way about me. If I came back drained, and every time I saw this person, there were problems or challenges that I had to deal with mentally or emotionally, and I couldn't really connect with her fully because I'm still thinking about what just happened on this other meeting with this other person. I think it would cause a problem in our relationship. And I want to focus all my energy into this current relationship. I don't want to have any of the past drain me or hold me down in any way, because what I have in front of me right here, right now, this is the person I'm going to spend the rest of my life with. At least that's my plan. And as long as that plan continues to go forward every single day, I'm going to commit to every single day with this person. So I'm throwing some of my own values your way. It's not fair. But this is a show about my thoughts, my insights, my opinions. And I'm just going to throw them your way, and whatever sticks, sticks. And if you don't like it, you can say, Paul, that's not good advice for me, and I'm not going to take it. And I'm going to say, well, I didn't give you advice. I was just sharing, you know, I'm just sharing my opinions, my insights. And if you value those and you want to follow those for yourself, it's your choice. And I hope no matter what you do, you find a way to make life better and get better outcomes and better results. I am all for things that energize you, or at least don't drain you. I'm all for going in the direction that provides the least amount of resistance. Another philosophy is, if you're trudging through mud, you're probably going in the wrong direction. If you have to try too hard, you're probably going in the wrong direction, because it shouldn't be that hard. If you have a friendship with your ex and it's that hard, I think you're going in the wrong direction. But that's my opinion. Thanks for showing up today. I appreciate you. Just do me a favor. Always keep an open mind. This is how you step into your power, so that you can be firm in your decisions and actions. And that's how you create the life you want. Always take steps to grow and evolve. You are powerful beyond measure. And above all, and this is something I absolutely know to be true about you, you are amazing.